I'm a recovering addict named Joe.
Joe.
I'd like to thank God for allowing me to be here. I'd like to thank God for allowing you guys to be here. But most of all, I'd like to thank God for Narcotics Anonymous and a wonderful new way of life. I'm going to reach out and ask for help from each and every one of you. And the first step, I will be referencing the literature from time to time. And I just want to say the help that I'm asking you for has a lot to do with our tradition, our second tradition. I'm going to ask that if you have a cell phone, a beeper, please turn it off. And the reason why I ask that is an atmosphere of recovery in our groups is one of the most valued assets and must be guarded carefully, or we lose it to politics of personalities. And a lot of people carry cell phones because of their personalities. I'm telling you, I'm here to guard the asset. Who's guarding the asset? Huh? I wanted to also take this time right now to share that I had yesterday at the hotel got a message that one of our members had died. And this guy was real enthusiastic about his recovery, did a lot of H&I. He just celebrated 14 months clean. You know, his name is John F. And what had happened was a couple of weeks ago, he didn't show up at the facility to do his H&I commitment. John would have never just missed the commitment without telling somebody. So he missed the commitment for a second time. And they said he died on the 2nd. They found him on the 12th. So I just want to, like, dedicate this sharing to my friend John, who was so enthusiastic about his recovery. Could we have a moment of silence? Thank you very much. Again, I'm a recovering addict named Joe. My home group is the First Things First group. I'm in the ABCD region of Narcotics Anonymous, Albany, New York. We meet Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. to help each other stay clean. And if you're ever in the Albany area of the ABCD region, you can look us up. We would love to have you. I came through the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous on June 9th, 1994. Prior to that, I remember that my disease had reduced me to a place where the only prayer that I could pray was, help me. I remember, like so many others, you know, going to cop and not wanting a cop. Drugs running out. Throw the stem up in the air, let it break on the ground, and say, what the fuck did I just do? I remember sitting in a house, in a roach-infested house, on a couch with four other addicts waiting for a knock at the door. I remember what it was like to be held hostage by a little tiny rock. See, I never want to forget what it was like for me in the end. I'm a classical gourmet chef from Zeculinetti Institute of America. At the end of my road, or I should say, prior to that, I know what it is to drink a $500 bottle of wine, but in the end, I was drinking a $1.54 bottle of Richard's Wild Irish Road still. I remember, you know, being enthusiastic about my education. But I had a disease that said, you can take your degree and put it on yourself. You got to serve me not now, but right now. And I remember what it was like. You know, and I've had some great joys in my life. You know, it talks about lost dreams awakening and new possibilities arise. I remember, you know, dreaming and working hard to make these dreams come true, like going to college and, you know, being good at what I did. I went to a school where there was 11 blacks on the whole campus. I graduated third in my class, and I still felt less than. I remember what it was like, you know, for those who've seen the movie The Godfather. I baked and decorated the 8-tier white lace cake for the movie The Godfather in 1975. I did recipe testing for the 1976 Culinary Olympic team. I worked at Lou Chow's, the Waldorf Astoria. I helped set up the 29 bake shops and the 1 and 2 World Trade Center for the Inhilco Company. I know what it's like to have dreams and aspirations. I know what it's like to be like enthusiastic about living. And I was reduced to my drawers sticking to my ass. My hair was nappy. My shoes were turned over. My arms were funky. And I was looking in the mirror saying, "You are right." I remember being reduced to that two-word prayer, "Help me." And as a direct result of that prayer, my last days, I was in a soup kitchen. And a guy told me about a place that he was going. And he told me that they fed you 3 times a day, they gave you clothes, and you didn't have to live like this no more. And I went to that place. And that place for me wasn't a step down, it was a step up. And I came into this fellowship and I started hearing things. You see, the very first meeting I ever went to in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, there was a guy from my hometown who was sharing. He had lived across the street. He had 8 years clean. And I remember him coming with his book under his arm, and I'm standing across the street saying, "Yo, man, come here. Come here, man." And he was like, he had his book under his arm. He said, "I got to go." You know what I'm saying? And I'd like to say hi to Ronnie C. Ronnie C. is still around. He just celebrated 17 years, you know. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here. You know, this topic, when I was talking to Karen on the phone and she was telling me, "Joe, your topic is dependent on a loving God. Do you think you can do it?" Do I think I can do it? I'm just a man for the job. I came to this fellowship and they told me I got here by way of disobedience, and the only way I would stay here is by being obedient. They said, "Work the steps. The steps are a solution. The steps are a survival kit. The steps are our best guarantee against relapse." They said the 12 steps are essential in order to participate in your recovery. So I was hearing the message. They said, "Get a sponsor. Listen for a sponsor." You know, and I heard my sponsor speak one day. And I walked up to him. I said, "Man, like, listen, I want you to be my sponsor." See, I had seen him coming to meetings on a regular basis. And he seemed to be at every meeting I went to. So he gave me a quarter. And he gave me his telephone number. He said, "Call me." And I called him. And I called him. And he said, "Call me tomorrow." And I called him. He says, "I'm busy right now. Call me." And I called him. 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 And I seen him one day. I said, "Yo, man, I've been calling you." I said, "I want to talk to you outside." He said, "Joe, I just want to tell you I don't sponsor nobody that don't want this program." And it's been 9 years, 10 months, and like 9 days, and I still call him. And I want to tell you, Donald, wherever you're at, I love you. He couldn't make it here today, although he had bought a registration to be here, you know. So as I embarked on this journey and got a sponsor, and I started working the steps right away. See, I was hearing the message. The message says the sooner we face our problems, within our society and everyday living. Just that much faster do I become acceptable. Acceptable to who? Me. Responsible. Responsible to who? Me. Productive. To who? Me. I started hearing the message when they said the sooner the addict, the sooner the addict faces own problems and dilemmas, just that much faster will he become a real productive member of society. I was hearing the message. See, I'm a student of the literature. And I want to tell you, you know, like in my area, they call me Joe Tex. And so I say things to them like, you know, like our literature is the closest thing I got to God. And I found some comfort in this fellowship like I've never found nowhere before in my life. I got here full of shame, guilt, embarrassment, remorse, fear, anxiety, frustration, confusion, loneliness, and despair. That's how I came here. I need to know how I came here. I need not forget what it was like being in those attributes. I need not ever forget what it was like when you smell like you want to be by yourself. You know what I'm saying? And you can't stand to smell yourself. You know, I remember what it was like, you know, taking off my shoes and my socks made that horrific noise when you took them off. You know what I'm saying? None of y'all might not have, like, experienced that level of dereliction and degradation, but why, E.T., you're eligible too. So I started working the steps right away. I started identifying with what it was like to be powerless over your addiction. When you don't want to use and you're using anyway, and you're using and you're crying, and you're crying and you're using, and you're copping, and boy, you just can't stop. It's just like you're just addicted to copping. I'm just addicted to like going in this direction. I don't want to go, but I gotta go. Oh man, I gotta go home and it runs out again. It kept running out, man. I came to the fellowship and they said, we are never satisfied. We'll never get enough. Huh? I heard what they were saying. Even with a college education, I couldn't figure that shit out. And the insanity was like, I'm ducking through alleyways. I only come out at night. I'm picking kitty litter up off the goddamn floor. At the end of my road, it wasn't about taking your drawers off, washing them. You took them off and threw them away. I know that laughter's out of identification. And for those who ain't laughing, you go your ass back out there. Y.E.T., you're eligible too. So I kept working the program. And I started to identify with what it was like, you know, in the third tradition, in the third step. In the third step, you know, they were talking about me. They've been talking about me since I came here. That I live to use and use to live. You know, they were talking about, you know, my whole life was the getting, the using and finding ways and means to get more. They were talking about me. They said, you know, the disease of addiction is about suffering. It says we suffer with a disease that expresses itself in ways that is antisocial, that makes detection and diagnosis and treatment difficult. I was understanding what they were saying. I realized that I was suffering. Suffering. I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, laughing and grinning and thinking like everything was all right. I didn't come down here just to see what the hell your guys were doing. I got here by sheer desperation. misery, suffering. I don't want to forget how I got here. Because those who fail to remember are doomed to repeat. We may find the willingness to work the third step by remembering where we came from and believing that where we are going is certain to be quite different. Though we don't know what this difference will entail, we know that it is better than what we had in the past. We rely on faith and belief that this decision is one of the best decisions we've ever made. And coming to Narcotics Anonymous and working the steps is one of the best decisions I ever made. You know, I want to continue on and tell you, like in the fourth step, you know, doing a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. You know, I ran into a couple of what we consider roadblocks, but they really weren't roadblocks. The bottom line is I just didn't want to come clean. Those are the issues that kept plaguing me. The ones that wouldn't let me sleep at night. Had me flopping like a fish out of the water. Had my pillow talking in my ear. Had me still filled with shame, guilt, embarrassment, remorse. It had me filled with anxiety. It had me filled with frustration and confusion. I didn't know what to do, and they kept saying, honest sharing is the antidote to disease thinking. So I had to continue to share. My sponsor used to say, share your ass off. You know what I'm saying? They said recovery was a continuous uphill journey. And if you wasn't going up, it's probably because you fucking up. You know what I'm saying? I was hearing the message. I was hearing the message. And they were talking about in the fourth step that as long as we stay clean, issues would surface. I was like, what issues? They said, you remember when you fondled a little girl? You remember when you had sex with two of your sisters and you said one was fiending and the other one was drunk? You remember when you like played with the little boy's wee-wee and it talked about it in our literature? We may find that our sexual beliefs and behaviors has caused problems in our relationships. We may have settled for sex when we really wanted love. We may have used sex to get something we wanted or believe by having sex we would extract a commitment from an unwilling partner. We asked ourselves if our sexual behavior has been based in selfishness or love. We may have used sex to fill a spiritual void we felt inside. Some of us felt shame as a result of our sexual practices. After years of compulsively acting on our fears and misguided beliefs about sex, we wanted to be at peace with our own sexuality. This is a very uncomfortable topic for most of us. Can you hear me? Some of y'all ain't got there yet. This is the most uncomfortable topic for most of us. And you sit around and think like nobody understands, you know, that you have incest issues too. That you're still ashamed of how you like sexual beliefs and practices, it says. Can you hear the message? Huh? So when I like hear that and I start like plugging into what's really going on with me, I start to get in touch with what the fourth step is all about. However, if we want something different than what we had, it is necessary to begin the process of change by writing about it. You see, this is a place where people in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous talk about a fourth step is hard. You know, it talks about ghosts in the closet. There ain't no goddamn ghost in the closet. That's your motherfucking ass still sneaking. Don't get mad because I'm talking. The fifth step is like doing spiritual surgery. What do you mean, God? Spiritual surgery. You got to go on the inside and reveal some of that stuff. You're going to have to reveal some of that stuff just so you can like look in the mirror at your own damn self. It ain't about how I see you. How do you see you? Huh? We were entirely ready to have God remove the defect of character. What is the main defect of character we have? Not wanting to go on the inside and reveal ourselves to ourselves. That's what the steps are about. It reveals me to me. It allows me to be all right with who I am. We humbly ask him to remove the shortcoming. The shortcoming is me being in denial about going on the inside and telling the truth about me. May the list of all the persons we have harmed become willing to make amends to them all. This says write a list. Stop the blame game. If it wasn't for this, if it wasn't for that, if he didn't do this, if she didn't do that, shut up. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ninth step is a responsibility step. God will always put you in the proper place at the proper time. Always. And you know in your heart of hearts. You'll feel it in every terra firma of your spirit. I gotta do it right now. They said if you sidestep doing it, you may be reserving a place in your program for a relapse. We continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. You know when you're fucking up. You know when you done said some shit out your mouth you ain't had no damn business. Do I have to say any more about that? We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. It's in the 11th step that I start to receive a power, a gift of listening, you know, a gift that connects me to the world, you know, and for those who didn't hear me, I need to say the third step, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. The fifth step, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of it wrong. The sixth step, we were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. The seventh step is about humbly asking him to remove the shortcoming. The 11th step, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the step process, we carried a message to the addict who still suffers. And that could be any addict at any given time. And I want to hit the topic that I'm here to do. And that topic is depending on a loving God. I'm going to take you to a place that's a little bit different. That if you read your literature, that places on in our literature in and living the program just for today. It says ongoing recovery. Ongoing. Hear the message. Ongoing recovery is dependent on a loving God who is dependent on a relationship with a loving God who will care for us and do for us what we find impossible to do for ourselves. Now let's slow down here because there's some words that we need to talk about. Ongoing. Ongoing recovery. What do you mean, God? Ongoing recovery. Ongoing. Meaning if you stop calling your sponsor. Meaning if you stop going to meetings. Meaning if you stop doing step work. Meaning if you stop doing service work. Ongoing recovery. Our second tradition says those who do not continue to be an active part of the fellowship face a rough road. Can you hear the message? I'm talking about like hearing and being obedient to the message of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm talking about doing something different than you've ever done in your life before. It talks about the relationship. How do I form a relationship with the God I'm understanding? Well, if you're in this room, you've done it already. I told you I got here by saying, help me. From that point on, I started to build a relationship with the God of my understanding because I kept doing the right thing for the right reason. And I kept moving in the right direction. And I started hearing, you got to go to meetings. You got to work the steps. You know, it said dependent. What do you mean by dependent? You know, your legs are dependent for you. You're dependent on your legs to walk. You're dependent on your ears to hear. You're dependent on your eyes to see. Ongoing recovery is dependent on a relationship with a loving God who will care for us and do for us what we find impossible. Impossible. Maybe you ain't hearing me, man. I said impossible. But in our 12th step, it says we will do things far beyond our capability. We will do some things that we thought were impossible. But remember now, you're guided by higher authority. The full fruit of the labor of love lives in the harvest. And it always comes in its right season. I want to tell you that it's an honor. It's an honor to come to the Chesapeake Potomac region of Narcotics Anonymous and just be invited here. I want to tell you, you know, like I've had a wonderful time. You know, I'm in a new relationship and that person came with me. Love you a lot, Chris. Thank you. I'd like to thank the people for the ABCD region who have come down to help support me. Thank you, people. You know who you are. This area, this thing is awesome. This thing is awesome. I just so happened to meet the convention chair. Was at a meeting I was in up in my area. And I don't know, I was sharing some old shit. And he came up to me at the meeting and after the meeting and gave me a stack of flyers. And he said, like, you know, like, there may be a possibility that you come down and share for us. And, you know, that was back in, November, Norman. We were at the meeting together. And, right away I knew I wanted to be here, whether I shared or not. I want to tell you, look around you. Look around you. You're looking at the gift. Look around you. I told you this is a program of obedience. Look around you. Some of y'all still hard-headed as hell. I ain't doing it because he said do it. Shit, you better start doing something different. But what you see is the miracle. Just reach out and touch somebody next to you. Just touch somebody and say, I love you. Just touch somebody. You know what I'm saying? Because, see, life is too short. We also lost another. Our convention chair just died recently. And last year, around this time, a guy that was on the programming committee with me for our convention died. We were together. Him and the guy I sponsored was together with him that night. So look around you, man. Like, go home and hug the people you love. Tell them you love them. If you got friends around here, you need to hug them. Don't leave this meeting tonight without getting a telephone number for somebody that you don't know. Because the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. My name is Joe. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing, Joe. And now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Anthony W. from Washington, D.C.
Good evening. I'm an addict named Anthony. Hi, everybody. It's a blessing to be in the meeting. And, you know, I was sitting there listening to Joe, and I'm not loud. You know? Okay, this is it. This is what you're going to get. Okay? So, you know, and I want to say that I thank the convention committee for thinking enough of me to ask me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope, you know, on this topic on the dependence on a loving God. I've been involved with this convention from the onset, and so I've been trying to get out of doing this workshop, you know, and every time I've tried to get out of this workshop, they've said, no, you need to do it. So I've gotten to a place where then, you know, nothing is out of order. I'm supposed to be doing it, you know, so I'm showing up. You know, just a little bit about me. You know, my clean date is December 6, 1993. I got to Narcotics Anonymous after 26 years of use, and I started using at 14. I was 41 years old when I got here, you know. And when I got here, you know, I was at the end of the road. It had all stopped working, you know. It all had stopped working. And that's not to say that I didn't have a whole lot of fun with using, you know, because I can remember, you know, having the car, having the job, you know, the good job, the house in Brooklyn, the apartment on Capitol Hill, and working for the stock exchange and traveling wherever I wanted to. And I remember coming, being sent to a meeting because I want to say I got jammed up. You know, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time in 1983. You know, and you know how they do, because I was a productive member of society at that time, I think. And I didn't have a record, and what they said to me was, "Mr. White, since you don't have a record, we're not going to send you to a facility. What we want you to do is find an outpatient program." You know, and I found an outpatient program. I did the research. Yeah, I found the outpatient program. I went to one meeting. I listened to y'all, and I thought y'all were crazy. You know, how could y'all be sitting in there talking about, you know, y'all life had gone down the tubes? I still had my car. Yeah. Yeah. I'm still going to work, you know. I was shooting a little BAM on Friday nights, you know. Couple of toots every now and then, you know, when I'd close the office door and tell the secretary, "Look, I'm on a call right now. You know, don't disturb me." And I take a couple of toots, you know, so it wasn't that bad, you know. Yeah. And what I did was I went continue to do what I wanted to do. And that was June of 1983. And when I came back to Anonymous, to this fellowship in December of 1993, I was sleeping on the streets. And I remember it. The police were putting on gloves and kicking my feet, telling me, "Dude, wake up. You need to move," you know. And I understand today what our literature talks about being reduced to living like an animal, because that's what had happened to me, you know. And I had become comfortable living that way, you know. It was all about using, defining the way, you know, means, the ways and means to get some more, you know. That's all it was for me. And I was okay, you know, doing the sloop lines, living from shelters, you know, and had gotten to the place where family members were no longer opening doors for me. You know, I'm the oldest of four, and I have a brother and two sisters who are younger than me, and they've all died as a direct result of this disease, you know. So by the time I got here, you know, I had some real big issues and some real big questions about why me? Why am I here when I did just as much or more? You know, what I'm finding out is I stay clean a day at a time. You know, why not me? You know, I'm here for a purpose, you know, and as I've stayed, I understand more and more that what the topic is about dependence on a loving God. And I've been wrestling with this because it's like, you know, hell, every time somebody asks me to share, they want to give me some of this spiritual shit, and I'm not going to say that I'm all that spiritual. Yeah. But the blessing is that I have come to learn that I do depend on a loving God, you know, because when I got here, I had issues with God. You know, and thank God the second step just talked about coming to believe. You know, it didn't tell me what I need to come to believe in. You know, it just said, just come to believe. You know, and I'm grateful for that, because what I began to come to believe in this fellowship was you people. You know, because I hadn't seen a group of people just stay clean and do stuff not using, because my way of thinking was all about using. You know, I couldn't grasp, when I got here, I couldn't grasp how to have fun and watch a movie and not be on. You know, when you pissed me off and I got upset, wasn't I supposed to use something? You know? Yeah. When you got on my nerve, I was supposed to have something in my system to help me stay away from you. I mean, because what it did, it was numb me to keep me away from you, and I wouldn't tell you how I felt, you know. So, you know, what I began to see was just that if I came in here and watched y'all, you know, things would get better, and that's what began to happen for me. You know, I was listening to Joe talk about the people who have died. Last year, I'm in the D.C. area, and last year, D.C. area did the convention here, and I was vice chair for the convention. And my sponsor at the time, who had sponsored me for since the day I had come into this fellowship, died like 2 weeks, 3 weeks prior to the convention taking place. So I was down here in the convention, you know, making sure that everything was going on, you know, going through that process of grief, you know. And the blessing is that I learned through that whole process, you know, what the third step talks about when it just says we surrender quietly and let the God of our understanding take care of us, you know. And that's my whole concept of that dependence on a loving God, is the fact that I've been here long enough to have some experiences in the fact of when I got here, I was the kind of person that had to do it my way. I had to make shit happen because I was the oldest. And since I was the oldest, it was all about me making shit happen. So when I got here and got clean and I started doing things in this fellowship, I still needed to make shit happen because I ain't had time to wait. You know, because, you know, in making that decision, you know, it was like, okay, I had that wait process. I needed to wait for stuff to come about. You know, but what I'm so grateful for is that through the journey of the steps and this whole process, my whole concept began to change, you know. And it's through life experiences, because I remember, you know, I share that with the guys that I sponsor a lot of times, that in that thing about me wanting to make shit happen. You know, I'm the kind of person that when I got here, I couldn't tell you that your money was my money. If it was the group money, it was my money. You know, you know, if it was the area's money, it was my money, because, see, I still had that fear of financial failure. When my finances got all messed up, everybody's money belonged to me because I needed to make sure that I was taken care of. You know, yeah. And, you know, what I'm so grateful for is that as I stayed and I began to get honest through the steps and the journey into self-acceptance, what began to happen for me is I got a conscience. And in that conscious awareness, what began to happen, I couldn't no longer do those things that I was doing. Stealing clean, you know. I couldn't come in here and lie, you know. Even though there's still some days, with 10 years clean, if it's going to benefit me, and I think I can get something out of the deal, I'll still tell you a lot. You know, because see, what I've understand through the steps is I'm still human. You know, but the kicker is I'm grateful for, there's a step there that lets me know that even though I'm going to make some mistakes, what I get is I get a second chance to repair that, you know. And as long as I stay in a conscious contact in a place of humility, you know, things will work out to my best interest, you know. And I don't lie as much as I did when I first got here, you know, because what I've learned is that I like going home at night and going to sleep, you know. I no longer toss and turn, you know. And those are the things that have happened with me coming in here and learning how to depend on a loving God. You know, like I said, when I got here, I was my own God, and I needed to make things happen. And in the process, I've learned that The God that I've come to understand has began to really do things for me and work things out, and to soothe my spirit and my fears, you know, and that's the beauty of this whole program, you know. I am just so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, you know, like I said, you know, the grief process today is not as hard as it was, you know, was when I first got here. You know, and I was thinking about the whole this whole thing when I got here today about, like I said, when I got here last year, my sponsor had died, and how I didn't think I could go on without that, because I really, here was a person who had seen me come to this program and get clean, and what was I going to do? You know, what has happened is that if I stay here and do the work, like Joe was saying, you know, God's beginning to put people in my life, and that's what he did. I've been down here today, man, and it's been a lot of fun, even though I've been working with this fellowship. You know, I've had my grand sponsor, my great-grand sponsor, my sponsor, and some guys that I sponsored down here at this convention, you know. And that has been the blessing, and what I'm talking about is that all I've ever wanted to do was just belong someplace, yeah. And that's what this whole fellowship has given me, is a place to belong, you know. And I'm grateful for that, you know. There's not much I can share on that except to just show you that I depend on a loving God, because I show up every day. I don't use. I do what I've done. For 10 years, I've done what y'all told me to do. Yeah. I don't pick up. Yeah. I go to a meeting. Yeah. I share honestly. Yeah. And I try to help somebody. And when I can't help anybody, what y'all told me to do, first and foremost, was to help the dummy, and that's me. You know. And I still do that. You know, because as much as I think I got the answer, I find out a lot of days I don't have the answer. And what I have to do is come in here and depend on you all. You know, I still at times have to come in here and depend on you all through the second step. And I use you all as my high power, you know, to get me through the process, because there are some times that even after making the decision, when I don't see it happening, what I need is I need to come in here and hear y'all tell me, Tony, just wait through the process. It's going to be okay. Yeah. As long as I can get that through and sitting in the meeting, it's okay with me, you know. And that's what my experiences have been, you know, through this process. Like I said, I'm just grateful for Narcotics Anonymous and being clean, you know. A day at a time. Life has gotten better for me, you know. I'm the addict who came here not wanting to be here, but not even a day, not thinking that I could get 6 minutes clean, and I've stayed this long, you know. And the journey has gotten better, you know. A day at a time, the journey has gotten better. I say to the newcomer, give yourself a chance. I heard that in treatment. You know, that's the first time I ever heard that. Just give yourself a chance, you know. If you don't pick up, just watch what happens, you know. Yeah. That's all. It's real simple, you know. They didn't tell me to do a whole lot of step work when I got here. They didn't tell me that I had to learn how to pray. None of that stuff. All they said was just don't pick up, set up front, and watch what happened, you know. And my life has changed through that whole process, you know. And like I said, my dependence today has been just through that journey, you know. I depend, the God that I've come to understand today is my concept, is the one that works for me. You know, it's not the one that I came in here, I didn't come in here fearing one, you know. Like I said, I came in here having issues with God, and as I've stayed, I understand that those issues were my own issues, because I had an inability to accept who I was, you know. And as I've stayed through the journey, through the steps, you know, my understanding of my high power has just broadened so much so, you know, Joe said it to the point that, you know, when I walk into meetings today and just walk into people that are on this path, I feel comfortable, you know. I no longer worry about what other people think or feel, you know. And when I say that, what I've learned is that my biggest enemy is me. and my thinking. You know, I'm the one who can beat me up the most. You know, and I'm grateful for that. You know, and that has all come about because of just this journey of just coming here and surrendering. You know, yeah. Like I said, I don't have a whole lot to say on that because where I was today with that with this whole topic was just that. As I surrender quietly on a daily basis, I let the God of my understanding take care of me, you know. And that's the whole premise of my recovery today, you know. With that, I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing. We have about 10 minutes. And before we open the meeting to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the podium one at a time. Anybody wants to share? Come
on. I'm an addict named Wesley.
Hey, Wesley.
And I wanted to thank the speakers for sharing. And, like, you know, my experience with dependence on a loving God is God's probably the one power that can help me the most because I still have problems with allowing people to be a part of my life. I'm at a point in my life, I got a little bit of clean time, I got some experience with recovery, and I'm just working on letting go of some outdated survival skills, and I'm really having a hard time. And right now I'm dealing with the consequences of some of my actions. I got into a physical altercation in the bathroom with somebody I used to sponsor, and the only nice step I could do with the dude was like, look, if you need to hit me because of this, or if this will make you feel better to beat my ass, then do what you have to do. And my daughter was born like last Wednesday. And I'm just like, I just want to be the man that God wants me to be. And it's like, really? I don't even want to go to conventions no more. I don't want to share no more workshops. I don't want to sponsor people anymore. I've had to get some outside help. You know, I've been divorced for 6 months. I found out I was clinically depressed. You know, I suffer from bipolar. And it's just like, you know, I'm doing the things I need to. And it's, but I really want to, I want to put my hands on this person. You know, I feel, you know, and I have to accept the consequences. I slept with his girl 8 months ago. He was selling death. We don't sell death, we just do it. I was there. It's over. I'm trying to move on with my life. And I ain't seen him, and now it's this. And now my ego's like, you need to, like, really rectify this. And it's, you know what, for real, it's not even important. It really isn't. And I need to tell myself that. You know, I still suffer from the disease of addiction. You know, I still suffer from the disease of addiction. I'm still an addict. And, like, you know, you can dress up a trash can. You can do a lot of different things. You know, and I'm just, I want to get to the application part of this. You understand? Like, application. You know, I feel a lot of guilt and I feel a lot of shame right now. I feel a little uncomfortable. I don't even really want to tell people, you know, and I got clean when I was 19, you know, I have 13 years clean, and it's like, I have some experience. I threw away an 8-year relationship with a sponsor because I told him I thought he was drinking his own Kool-Aid because he crossed boundaries in our relationship, and that's just how I am. I'm self-destructive by nature, you know, I can't allow people to pull me up, and it's like, but I do know that I have a God, and I believe in my higher power, and I believe in the principles of this program, and that I'll stay clean no matter what. And I will be, you know, and I've been struggling with judgment. I mean, in the area that I live in, it's really rural and it's small, and people are just really, like, lost and confused. And I sit in meetings and I'm, like, struggling. And, like, I talked to my sponsor, and I'll wrap it up with this. He was like, you know, the disease will use anything it can for you not to focus on the message. Who cares what language they use? Who cares, Wesley? Focus on the message. Raise your daughter, pay your bills, help the people you sponsor, And, you know, love the person you're in a relationship with. And that's all that matters. But I still, like, use people, places, and things. The outfit, acting like a fool in the hallway. It's just, I don't know. You know, and I just wanted to share that because I just feel really uncomfortable right now. And I guess that's how I'm supposed to feel. You know, and all it is that he's hurt. That's it. He's hurt. I'm hurt. And it's like, and I'm one of the people that just bring it to the mic. I'm not scared to share my story. If you want to judge me because of that, that's on you. But wait till you get somebody talking that kind of stuff. Or you, if you ain't in a situation, it's hard to be like telling somebody. And, you know, just I wanted to thank you for allowing me to just come up here and puke a little because, like, I just really feel a little uncomfortable. And I'll throw this out. Please don't fix me. If you have some experience with what I'm struggling with, you know, like raising babies and kids, in relationships and just trying to be a better person, please just kind of give me some suggestions, you know, because I'm really not okay right now. And I don't want to hurt myself. This ain't the place for that shit. And no, that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
See anyone else?
Hi, I'm Barry, and I'm an addict. And I came into these rooms thinking I was a social addict. The last time I used, I was completely alone and got stopped by one of Montgomery County's finest on Labor Day weekend, 1985. And I came in here because I was finally getting in trouble by the law, but the clues that I couldn't quit on my own just weren't enough for me to realize I had a problem. I was taking a little ride in a police car with my hands tied behind me with plastic trash bag ties that they're using for handcuffs. What was my wake up call? And I came in here an angry, militant atheist because I thought I'd tried God, and couldn't find what I was looking for there. I tried on several different religions, and, you know. The bottom line is I came in here hurting, and I didn't want to hurt anymore. I thought I was going to be taught how to use responsibly, and that wasn't it. But I did what I saw people doing for as long as I could. I took suggestions for as long as I could. When I felt like using, I shared about it, and the feeling of wanting to use went away for that day. But I was still plagued with obsessions and compulsions and had to deal with it on a daily basis until I sat down to actually start doing some step working and writing. And one of the questions asked me something to the effect of, describe the higher power you found in these rooms and what you hope to accomplish. And I realized I wasn't alone in that room. I wasn't alone. And so, you know, all at once I was flooded with an image of what it was I was running away from. And I wasn't scared anymore. I realized that my higher power was loving and caring and would tell me what to do. I was looking for guidance and direction. That's why I used in the first place. I saw everybody getting along in groups of twos and threes, and I was alone as a kid. And when I wasn't, it was because I was busy getting beaten up. And, you know, I was looking for the guidance and direction all along. The guidance and direction that I found once I came to these rooms helped me to see that I was full of myself and there wasn't room for anything else. All at once, when I accepted that there's a higher power in my life, several things happened. One of them was the obsession and compulsion to use is gone. I mean, I'd have memories of things every once in a while. But I'm not plagued by the obsession and the compulsion to use, and I'm able to see the end of the tape as soon as I see the beginning of the tape. And I got as far as I could. I got as far as I could go in believing that I was in orbit around this higher power, and sometimes I was in the furthest point in the orbit around. And I was losing things in my life. You know, I had the same job for 14 years until. I had a company of my own, lost it. because of my character defects. And I'm wondering, I got 14 years at this point, at that point. How come I'm still having these kind of problems having to do with self-esteem and self-worth and, you know, what's the matter with me? Why isn't it working for me? If it works for other people, I've seen the steps working for me when I use them. How, you know, what can I do with this? And I had to take a look at, I had to take a look a little deeper inside of myself. And as a result, realizing some things that I'd learned wrong, and dealing with the grief that I came from thinking that I knew something and letting go of that, I came to a new understanding. I'm not in orbit around God. God's inside of me. If He's everywhere, He's inside of me too. That makes it impossible for me to be a bad neighborhood. And so, I'm worthy of being forgiven. And so I began to forgive myself. And that's when I was able to start doing some things that I didn't think I was worthy of doing or capable of doing. That's when 12-step work took on a whole different meaning, because I realized that God talked to me, not just inside my head, but through people. You know? That that there are a lot of hands up for me. I can't. It's not just my sponsor. I am not the end of the chain. And it's not just my sponsor who's at the end of the chain. We got one hand up this way and the other hand like this for a reason. Because that's, you know, we got to help somebody and we got to accept help. And when I started realizing that, that's when I started being able to rely on the love of my higher power. Thanks.
I want to thank everyone who shared. Can we have a moment of silence followed by a surrender prayer, please? God, grant me serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.